All right. Let's pray. Father, thanks for these guys. I pray that these young leaders will turn into a massive influence for Christ, for the gospel, and for the nations. I ask this in Christ's name. Amen. Before I jump in, let's talk leadership a little bit. Is there something you'd want to ask me about leadership? Something that's on your mind? And if not, I'll just end with my final challenge that I had prepared. But I don't know if there's something you want to talk about. I'd be glad to address anything. Maybe something you're thinking about. Maybe something you want clarification on, you want me to articulate better, or something you're interested in. It really helps a teacher to get feedback from his students because you kind of know what you're hitting on and what you're missing and that kind of thing. So is there anything you'd like to talk about in the genre of leadership, in the category of leadership? Or when you think about leadership, does this stuff make sense? Or are you even thinking about being a leader? I mean, do you think about going back to school and leading at school? Or are you just going to chill? And you think about leading on the sports teams? You think about leading whatever club you're in? It doesn't matter. What is it? So talk to me. Leaders lead, so start talking. Yes, son.
You're hitting on the main points pretty good, I think, for me at least. But everything that you said is really helpful, so there's really not a lot to do that.
Right. At your age, are you thinking about leadership? Mm-hmm. Or has it crossed your mind, or are you just kind of like going day by day, just flowing through life? Or are you actually thinking about it? Do your parents talk to you about leadership?
No.
No?
Really?
Not really?
Some
do, some don't. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Well, it also helps as a son. I can tell you from a father, because since my son's not here, it helps when he asks questions too. Because I don't want to act like the creepy dad that I'm always teaching, because I teach for a living, so I just walk around teaching him all the time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be fun too. So sometimes you just got to, and that could be something you return from camp, and when you this summer and you go on vacation and you hang out with your dad or any, you know, neighbor or whatever, just ask him, say, you know, what's your perspective on leadership? What does leadership look like? Ask those big questions. Throw some grenades into the middle of the conversation with your parents and uncles. You go to family reunions, and you know, everyone's got a crazy Uncle Buck, you know. So ask crazy Uncle Buck why he's crazy, you know. That'll keep it going for the afternoon. What else, leadership-wise? Well, that's good. I think you go with any decision you go into with, you want someone else to have the opportunity, right? Because you're esteeming others better than yourself. So remember, leadership is all about others. It's never about yourself. So at any point, you can deflect, you know, and let somebody else engage in leadership. Also, it's a part of training leaders. You know, it's far easier for me to just do it than to train somebody to do it. It's far more time-consuming for me to train somebody to do it when I know I could do it just like that, you know. And that same thing with my son. Sometimes, like, putting together the doghouse, I could do it a whole lot faster, but I'm having him do it as a summer project. So he's building it. You know, it's going to probably take him all summer. I could knock it out in a day or 2 hours, you know. But he's, you know, doing everything fastidiously. And so it's better to train somebody to do it and let somebody else do it and just monitor it and shepherd it. And so I think at any point you can step back. Now, sometimes, if you're playing football and you're the quarterback and you don't go, hey, I'm not going to play quarterback tonight, you know, I want to be on the line, you know, and you'll get creamed on the line. It just doesn't even make sense. I mean, there's wisdom in that, right? But I think any time you can let somebody else step up or encourage them to lead or to call them up or call them out to lead, any time you can do it is fabulous because you're about other people leading. You're esteeming others better than yourself. I think that's exactly what Jesus was trying to do. He's taking the step back. You know, he was God, and he came and died. So he modeled this fabulously. I mean, it was perfect, spot-on kind of leadership. He just backed up and said, okay, I'll be the one that dies. You know, so it's a big part of leadership. We haven't had a chance to talk about it, but anybody can die once. The big challenge for you in your Christian life is learning how to die every single day, because every single day you got to get up and you got to die to yourself and live for others. And in a moment, anybody could die, you know, for a cause or for somebody, and it'd be heroic and recognized as such. But what's ordinary and equally heroic is you dying every single day of your life. Like every single day. Getting up, putting your feet on the floor, pointing your toes towards the door and say, you know what? This day is not about me. It doesn't matter if my needs are met or not. I'm only concerned about other people's needs. That's how you think like a servant. That's how Christ would think. And if you want to have biblical kind of leadership in your life, then that's the kind of thinking you have to have. So anytime you can defer and let other people lead. And it's sometimes inconvenient. And sometimes they got to learn by failing. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, yeah, I can go up and MC, but I have two new MCs. And so, you know, the first night they kind of start off, you might not even notice it, but it was kind of like telling announcements. It was kind of like boring. We needed to start high. You know, big music, you know, don't get up there and talk about where's the restrooms. It's not how you start a conference, you know. But we pull them aside and we shepherd them, said, no, don't do that. Do this next time. So next week they'll correct, you know. I could go up and do a far better job, but I do it all. I MC most of the events here on the campus. But I didn't because I want to train them to do it and let them lead. So that's the kind of an example. Anytime I can do that is far better, far better. Another question? Yes?
If you're more on the gray side, how do you get more grit?
If you're more on the gray side, how do you get more grit? You'd be around people who are gritty. So, right? Example. So example is king in leadership. You're called to be an example. You look for examples. So look for someone that's a little tougher. You know, watch them. Study people. You know, study books on, you know, being stronger and knowing how to do certain things in life. And so that's exactly what you do. You'd study people and learn. There's lots of guys. And then they can learn from you or share. Say, I'd like to teach you to be a little more graceful. You teach me to be a little more gritty, you know. So, absolutely.
How do you know when you're discredited as a leader, according to the 15 attributes you were saying? Like, is there like a certain number that you have to lose before you're discredited, or?
Right. No, there's a difference between...
No one's perfect, so you're not going to have them all.
Exactly. And here's two categories you should think about. There's a difference between unqualified and disqualified. You know, at any point, you could become unqualified, and that would be defined as a sustained pattern. Remember, there's a difference between a bad day and a bad year. Mm-hmm. In other words, you've got a sustained stronghold of sin in your life. That may be the occasion where you step back. I need time to focus on my heart and character. I don't need to be leading. I need to be thinking and making corrections, course corrections. There's also times where you're disqualified, where you go out and do something, you know, immoral. You commit adultery, where you're not going to be in the ministry in that context there. You know, you're not going to be disqualified from life, obviously. But there's certain sins that reach a certain level. I mean, there are, I know all sin is sin, but certain sins have greater consequences, right? There's a difference between punching somebody in the nose and stabbing them and killing them. Clearly, right? I mean, we know both are sins, yes, but the consequences, one dies, the other, you know, gets an ice pack. You see what I'm saying? So there's different qualifications. So I think you've always got to sort through, is this guy disqualified or is he unqualified? So many of you right now, compared to this elder list of 15, are unqualified, right? You're just not there yet. Which is perfectly fine. That's why I say it's a mirror and something to attain to. Being unqualified is just a good thing for your heart to know, hey, I got some things to work on. I got some junk to work out, you know. Disqualified means you can't get there because there's something, you know, you've done something so crazy, bizarre, you know, that it's not going to allow you to be in, you know, a local church elder or spiritual leadership. But, you know, you could be disqualified in a local church context and be qualified to lead a company. Does that make sense? And that's where the mistake happens. In local churches, as pastors, we're shepherding them all the time. They often look at the guy that can run the bank and say, oh, that guy must be able to run the church. It doesn't always correlate. So if you can, if you're really good at business, doesn't mean you can come into the church, because in the business world and in the marketplace, the way up is up. But all of a sudden he comes to the church on Sunday, he shifts gears and the way up is down. It's humility. So it's hard for guys, you know, to keep shifting gears, you know. It's just like a, any of you guys have a dad that's a police officer? Anybody? Yeah, I've not been a police officer. But if they're a police officer, then, you know, I mean, I can imagine if you're dealing with crime all day long and chasing people. And, I mean, it's a very intense, intense job. And then you try to come home and hang out with the kids, you know. You know, right. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to shift gears all the time. So just because you can run the bank doesn't mean you can run the church. And so, but you have to sort through that all the time. So you could be disqualified to run a local church and be the CEO of Apple Computers. Right? So, but the character is king, and that's why we use that as just a grid, kind of as a mirror. But I think it's something you should always attain to. Sure, you should always be ready to be deployed. You should always be ready to be qualified. You may not hold the office. Like a lot of people that I know aren't elders in a church as this office defines, but they're qualified to be. They just may not hold the title, or they may have other greater responsibilities, or there's a season in their life where they want to focus more on their kids, and there's all kinds of things that weigh into that kind of decision. Yeah. Other questions? Left side, you've got to pick it up now. You're getting a little weak. Leadership, what are you thinking about? Questions? Come on. You two in the back, what are you thinking? Stay as far away from that creepy guy as possible, is that what you're thinking? Come on. Does it make sense? Doesn't make sense? Weird, I can't wait to get home, get on my Xbox 360. PlayStations aren't good. I heard that. That's what girls use, PlayStations. I'm just kidding, relax. Oh, go ahead, yes.
How would you practice leadership?
How do I?
As us teenagers, you obviously don't have all that much authority, so how would you go about practicing?
Right. Let me use a different word. I would say dominion. I would start taking dominion, because that's because all the leadership goes back to Genesis, right? Genesis 3, God commands men, your future men, your banes, you know, boys becoming men. You're in this transition, and so it's about taking dominion. That's what he told Adam. You know, by the sweat of your brow, you need to take dominion, and you're going to work the rest of your life. All right, that's just the way it is. That's because of Adam's sin. We talked about this yesterday. Adam's sin catapulted the whole world into sin, and the fruit of that, or the consequence, the afterwards of that is, you're going to work, and you're going to lead, and you're going to be accountable for your families. You're going to be accountable for your wife. You're going to be accountable for your kids. You're going to answer for all of it. You say, I don't want that. Too bad. That's what comes with being a man. All right? That's why you look different, you smell different, and you think different. That is just the way you were designed this way, right, to do. So how do I take dominion as a young person? Real simple, real practical. Your room, your space. You're not given a 3,600 square foot house or a 2,000 square foot house. That's your dad's responsibility, or your mom, depending on your family situation. But your room is your responsibility. So take dominion over it. Freak your parents out. Come back from camp and clean your room. You'll find things you've been missing for years. You'll find food, snacks, and we'll find boxes of food under the bed. It's an amazing thing. If you just clean your room, you won't go hungry. If you're hungry, come over and get under one of our beds, my boys' beds, and you'll find food. But that's just a simple thing. Take dominion. I think, second, I'd take opportunity. So you go back to school, or even this summer, if you get an opportunity to lead, if you get an opportunity to speak, if you get an opportunity to lead on the basketball team, lead on the archery team, lead on the chess team, lead on the gaming team, lead on web design, then take it and say, I'll do it. You don't ever look for the least resistance. Look for the hardest path. So if it's the one job that nobody wants in school, jump all over it. That's the one I want, because you're going to learn in doing the little things, and this is what Jesus said, if you're faithful with the little things, you'll get much. But I'm looking for guys, when I look for leaders among our team, and I have 750 employees work for me, when I look at the leaders among them, I'm looking for those that are willing to get dirty. They're willing to get dirty, and they're willing to go to the dark places. They're willing to go to the least of these. They're willing to care about people, and they're really passionate about that. That's the kind of person I'm looking for. I can teach skill. You know, I can't teach attitude. So if they got a bad attitude, I can't get around that. I can't teach attitude. I can teach skill. So if you've got a great attitude, which you should coming home from camp, if you got a great attitude, then I can teach you just about anything. I can teach you how to change your oil. I can teach you how to do those things. So I think you take opportunities. So when you get back to school and then something comes up in class and the teacher says, hey, who wants to do this? Jump on it, you know. If you have a choice between reading a 200-page book, if you're homeschooled, and a 400-page book, you go 400 all day long. See? It's just a way of thinking. That's how I would roll. That's how we do. Because we do hard things, you know? So I don't give my son at home in the summer. He doesn't get access to the computer until afternoon. Now, partly that's just smart because it's cool in the morning, so they go out and play, and they don't get any technology. So they play, they do their chores, they do their reading, they do their Bible time, they do all that kind of stuff in the morning. Then the afternoon, when it gets hot, I let them come in and freak out and go in the dark basement and, you know, go online and play whatever they want to play for an agreed amount of time. So look for the hard things. Take the big things and take the big challenge, right? So like this summer, my son's a good knee boarder, and I want him to step up to wakeboarding. I like to wakeboard. We have a boat. And so I've already told him. I said, look, we're going to win on wakeboarding. You're going to learn it. And by the end of summer, I want you 360. You're going to figure this out. I'm going to teach you how to do this. You're going to do it. I don't know. Yes, you are. So I don't give him a choice, you know. They don't get a choice. I want to play soccer. No, you're not. Because they have ties in soccer. Soccer's not a sport. Everybody ties. We don't tie. We're not playing soccer. Our home doesn't play soccer. It just ain't going to happen, you know. You watch soccer. You don't play it. You know, you just watch the little guys play overseas, you know. I'm just kidding about soccer. I know some of you guys are soccer players. And my son plays soccer. That was a joke. Come on. It's a relationship. Work with me a little bit. You got to be funny, okay? But I'm just saying, like, you know, we do the hardest things. And so that's another thing. Take opportunity. So you take dominion, take opportunity. And then the third is serve somebody. How do you take care of your brother or sister? Instead of punching them and agitating them and picking at them and seeing them as an irritant, disciple them. You know, love on them. Correct them. If they're a goober, put them in a headlock. Give them a noogie. Give them a swirly. Teach them a lesson. Teach them pecking order. This is how it rolls in the house. You are little, I am big. I will crush you. You know? See? But I'm just saying, like, you know, but help them. Come alongside in the name of Christ. Encourage them and strengthen them and minister to them and give yourself away. So I would go back from camp. The biggest thing you don't want to do is when you leave camp, you don't want to go back and boast of a bunch of things you'll never do. So when your family says, how did camp go? It was awesome. Changed my life. And then you just show them how it changed your life. Don't talk about it. Don't talk a good game. Act a good game. So act different. You should come back from this 4 days and be different. Just like if you go to a basketball camp this summer or baseball camp or whatever you're going to do after this, you should come back a better baseball player. That was the idea of them sending you to camp. You know, be stronger. And here it's about character and gospel and understanding your relationship with God. So this is a huge, huge opportunity. And God goes to camp, we know that. And it's a big deal to us. And so you get to encounter God in a unique way you wouldn't have encountered had you not come. So if you take dominion and you take opportunity and then you give yourself away, those are three things that I would do. And they look different in everyone's context, you know. You could look around for people who have less than you. One thing we do in our home every year is we look around for something we have two of and we give one away. So you got two iPods and one kid doesn't have an iPod, give your iPod away. And you give people the best iPod. You don't give them your junky one. You know. You know what I'm saying? Like, so if we have twos, I mean somebody could just, you got two of something in your room. You don't need two. Give one away. Stop being such a weirdo. You don't need two, you know. You need one shirt, one pair of shorts all summer. Don't change. Just keep them on. Roll. Hardcore, simple, right? It's not complex. Be a simple person. And so I'm just saying, like, that's the kind of stuff I do. What are some of your ideas? What are you planning to do about leadership when you go back? I just told you, take dominion, take opportunity, and care for the least of these by giving yourself away. What are you going to do now? Any ideas?
Opportunities.
What opportunities? Be specific. What do you need to fix when you go home? You, right here, tell us. Your room a mess right now? Is your room a mess?
One of them is, yes.
One of them. That's a first world problem. One of my rooms. So you got two different homes, right? Got it. Yep. So one of them needs to be corrected. So that'll give you something to do this summer. But you don't go, hey, I just want you to know I'm going to go ahead and deploy some leadership and clean my room. Because then you lose all the reward. You just go do it and shut your mouth. And then they go in and they go, what's wrong with Billy? Someone snatched our child. He's actually turning his cleaning his room. No, it's called the Bible. It's called dominion. That's what leaders do. So if you can't make your bed, here's the deal. If you can't make your bed, you can't lead anyone. That's the bottom line. Right? So here's what, something I want you to watch. Write this down. It's the graduation speech in May at Texas University by General McChrystal. And I want you to watch it. He opens his line this: if you can't make your bed, you'll never be able to lead. That's his opening salvo. It's a graduation speech from college. He's the commander of all the SEALs. And he gave a 20-minute speech. It's on the internet. You just type it in. Graduation, Texas University. And you type that in. And when you get home, or you YouTube it. It's on YouTube. Just YouTube it. And watch it on your own. And I'm telling you, that'll give you some great ideas. Because he talks about, as a young boy, how he learned to do the simplest things. And how he didn't see any reason to do them when he was a boy, but he sees every reason to do them as an adult, as a leader. And so this guy's got all these medals on him. I mean, he is a man's man and a killing machine. So he's respectable. What'd you say?
What was the guy's name?
Let me just look it up real quick so I have it. So I hate to not give you the right one. I want to give you exact, because now we got a third homework assignment. Holy guacamole. Don't panic. Okay. Graduation at Texas University. Guys, do that? What do? We jump in a pit on a snowy day and we kill a lion. That's how you do it. You gotta have a little grunt. We do that in our home. Creeps your mom out. Maybe it's not Texas University. Yes. Is it McRaven? Yeah. What is it? What university? I may have it wrong.
University of Texas.
Yeah.
At Austin, 2014.
Yes. What is his name?
McRaven.
McRaven. Yeah.
McRaven.
It's awesome. Okay, so here's your homework. Write this down. Couch potatoes. First one, what is the first thing you're going to do? You're going to read Proverbs 1:1 to 9:18. Why?
Because it's directed to men.
I talked to Dr. Moeller yesterday for lunch, and he said, what should I do for the students? I said, you need to have a passage that's directed to these guys. And so he's doing Ecclesiastes, because he said, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. That's what he's going to do in the next hour. It's going to be killer. You'll love it. So you're going to read Proverbs 1:1 to 9:18 because it's directed at you guys. I mean, when God writes a book and then he says inside that book, I've got a few chapters specifically for young boys or young men, shall I say, you guys, then you want to take note of that. Second thing you're going to do, what? You're going to have three relationships in your life, right? Paul is who? Someone older, wiser, further down the trail. Timothy?
Younger.
Your four-year-old guys around here, you should be taken under your wing. Oh, yeah, that's a good word. You sold your buddy. You should have taken it. That was me. I own it. See, you just it was all about you. You just learned a lesson. Just kidding. And then who?
Barnabas.
Who's the Barnabas?
Same age.
Right here. You pick him out of the room, right? You're in your youth group. Right? So it could be your youth pastor. You creep your youth pastor out if you go to him and say, hey, could I spend some extra time with you this summer? He'll like freak out, like, really? He'll love it. You'll honor it. That's weird. Okay, third, you're going to watch this 20-minute video. Isn't it about 20 minutes?
Yeah, 19:27.
Yeah, 19 minutes. It's 10 things he's teaching to every young man. You got to get it. You got to watch it. Okay, that's your homework. All right? And I'm adding the fourth one. Here it is. You need to take dominion, or apply what the question was on the floor. You need to take dominion over your room, over your brother, over doing your chores, over cleaning your parents' car. For me, I take dominion over my car. My car is, you know, right now it's a little dirty on the outside, but it's spectacular on the inside. Every night I vacuum my car out. Every night. You say, why? Because I don't want a dirty car. It just feels good to have a clean car when I get in the morning. And, you know, especially when it's a Ferrari. You know, I'm just kidding. I have a Ford. You guys are like, oh, how can a preacher have a Ferrari? No. Yeah, see, you were judging. You were judging me. You're a hater.
I was judging.
Yes, you're trying to judge the pastors here. Yeah, it's all sin for us to have good things, but you punks can have every toy in the world. All right. So I want you to take dominion over something. And when I say dominion over your brother, that doesn't mean to crush him. That means to help him. Okay, the idea. Because some of you are thinking, oh, I finally got permission from camp to punch my little brother in the head. All right, let's talk about one last thing, taking risk. Let's talk about taking risk because I think it's a big part of being a leader. So here's where we've been. Here's the last challenge. Leaders fear God. Leaders act like men. Leaders make character king. And leaders are courageous. Leaders are courageous leaders, all right? And I want to do it in a parable. It's found in Luke 19. If you want to take a peek at it, I'm just going to walk you through it. But I want you to take more risks. It's one of the big regrets. Remember, my challenges to you is an older guy passing off to you guys. If I had a chance to do over, I would do more of this. Now, I'm a risky guy, and I pride myself in taking a modicum of risk. But I want you guys to take more risk, okay? I think we play it safe. I think some of you in here are living your life right now. You want to be a leader in your heart, but you just keep playing it safe. It's the bottom of the ninth, bases loaded, and you want to bunt. All right? Or you don't even want to go into the game. You want, you know, the number four cleanup hitter to go in the game. Or you're like, I don't want to go in the field. You know, you don't want to get in the arena. I need you to get in the arena. And there's passages like this that remind you and I about how significant it is to get in the arena here. And so I want to read you this parable. Okay, so just a little bit about a parable to help you when you read a parable in the Bible. The parable is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. So Jesus would then look out or say something that they would know about, they would relate to physically and see, or people they'd know, or a story they'd know, and then he spins it, and it has a singular meaning. He wants to, so he uses an earthly story to challenge them with a gospel principle and with a leadership principle. And so I fear that some of you are playing it safe. Sometimes I can see it in your eyes. You're like, what am I doing here? You know, I just want to go back to video games. I just want to write code. And I want you to write code. And remember I told you the first day, learn another language. That other language may be COBOL. It may be computer language. It may be OS 7. You don't even know what COBOL is because you guys are young. But you do? I just called you out. That was good. You do know what it is. That's strong. But I teach my son, hey, if you want a job the rest of your life, you learn how to code, you'll always have a job because that's where the whole thing's going, is that way. So you at least have a backup job, even if you're going to be in the military or a pastor or a missionary or going to do something crazy in life. Have a second language. That second language doesn't have to be Spanish. Doesn't have to be French. It can be OS 7. So learn another language. That's one of my big regrets. I'm like monolithic. I can barely speak English, you know. And that's my native tongue. So that's what's frightening about the whole thing. And so don't play it safe. And remember that when I talk about taking risk, I'm not talking about you taking physical risk where you risk life and limb. I'm talking about you take risk again. Remember, all leadership points towards others. So you take risk in caring for others. You do crazy things so that you can care for other people, so that you can deploy your leadership towards other people. Another reason why I want you to take risks is because of James 4. You don't know what tomorrow brings. You see, one of the things about being young, your age, you're not thinking, what am I going to be doing when I'm 49 like that guy? You know, or, you know, you're not thinking that far out, right? You're living kind of in the moment, and that's normal and natural. We want you to think about the afterwards, that there are consequences for your decisions. But I also want to remind you that you can't control tomorrow. So you are, in some sense, you have to live, and Jesus said it, your daily bread, right? Give me my daily bread. You don't know what tomorrow holds, and that's exactly what James 4 states. Don't boast about tomorrow because tomorrow will be sufficient for itself. You don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. And that's why you heard me kind of passionately pleading with you yesterday about the gospel. I don't want you to procrastinate having a relationship with Jesus Christ. Some of you may not be a Christian. And if you put that off, and on the way home tomorrow or today, the bus gets in an accident or the van rolls and you die, you're going to be standing face to face with Jesus coming right off camp. You say, well, you're trying to scare me. I am trying to scare you. It's a frightening thing, you know. You should be thinking about these things. So we want you to think about the right things, their priorities. And so we want you to think about your relationship with Christ. And a part of this whole thing is you don't know what tomorrow will bring. Risk, listen to me. Risk is the air you breathe as a leader. If you're going to be an effective, strong, healthy, game-changing, life-altering, if you're going to put a dent in this world, you're going to have to breathe in the air of risk. Okay? So playing it safe is not a biblical concept. Being responsible and risky for others' good is a biblical context. Look at Luke 19, 11 and following. This is the parable here, and let me read it to you, and then I'll just make some comments about the risk. While they were listening to these things, Jesus went to tell a parable, just a story. So he's just hanging out with his buddies. They're drinking Arnold Palmer's, a little bit of lemonade, more lemonade than tea for your age, more tea than lemonade for my age because I'm old. Because he was near Jerusalem, and they supposed that the kingdom of God was going to appear immediately. So they're sitting around talking about, hey, because they didn't know Jesus was going to die. They thought he was going to come in on a white horse, and he came in on a donkey. But they thought he was going to come in on a white horse, swords flailing, and he was going to kick butt and take names. That's what they thought. But he didn't. He came in on a donkey, and he was crucified. So this is right prior to that, that context. So he said, here's the story. There's this nobleman went to a distant country to receive a kingdom for himself. The nobleman in the story is Jesus. That's who he's talking about. But he's telling a story, right? So this nobleman went to a distant country to receive a kingdom for himself and then return. He called then 10 of his slaves, his workers, and gave them each 10 minas. 10 minas is about 3 months' work, all right? So a summer's worth of work for you guys. If you're working this summer, if you make enough money, right? About that much money are 10 minas. And he said to them, do business until I come back. Now look at verse 14. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, we do not want this man to reign over. So the people, Jesus is talking about that because he's talking about going into Jerusalem. They think they're going to love him. He knows they're going to hate him and kill him. So he says, the citizens hated him. They don't want his leadership. They don't want him to be lord of their life. Verse 15, when he returned, after receiving the kingdom, he ordered these slaves to whom he had given the money be called to him so that he might know what business they had done. Check it out. The first appeared saying, master, your mina has made 10 minas. So this is like Shark Tank. Anybody ever watch Shark Tank? Uh-huh. All right. So he gives them a dollar investment. This guy comes back with $10. So this is a tenfold return on it there on his investment. He's like, killer. And he said to him, well, look, killer. Well done. That translates killer. Good slave, because you've been faithful in a very little thing, you are able to be an authority over 10 cities. Okay, here it is. Remember what I told you. If you're faithful with a little and you deploy leadership a little bit this summer, you're going to get and find your parents giving you more responsibility. You're going to find your teachers giving you more responsibility. You're going to find your teacher putting you and giving you more responsibility, right? And even in athletics, guys, because I know some of you guys love it like I do, you know, I have ordinary skill, all right? But I could hustle like a beast. Remember what I told you in the military? I could run like a deer and run for days, all right? So I wasn't the strongest guy. I couldn't lift the most amount of weight, but I'll out-hustle and outrun anyone, right? So in basketball, I had modest ability, you know, but I tell you what they did. I hustled. And I was like sixth man on the team. And you know what I did? I didn't get shamed by that. The coach would put me in and to work with the team to get those five ready. And I would drive those five batty. I would chase them around. I'd be all up in their face. You know, they're trying to shoot. And I would just like, I was just a machine hustling. Well, I was faithful to the little things. And anytime they needed someone to go in to fill in the gap, that's where I got that gap role. So I wasn't a starter, but I was a gapper, you know, and I was a doggone good one. So you see what I'm saying? That's what I mean. Be faithful with the little stuff, right? Verse 18, a second came. So out of the 10 guys, he gave 10 guys, you know, a mina each. He only brings three of them in for accountability. The second came in saying, your miner master has made five minas. Still respectable in investing. If you can return fivefold on your investment, it's a big deal. Here at Southern Seminary, I manage about $100 million as the investment manager here at the Southern Seminary. And so I manage that money. So I'm in investments all the time. Fivefold, I'll take it all day long. I mean, that's massive returns on your investment, right? Okay? And he said to him also, you will be over five cities. So it's going to be correlated. Notice one thing. It's not like athletics today. Everyone's a winner. My little five-year-old goes and plays baseball. He gets a trophy and he lost. I'm like, no, no, we don't get trophies when we lose. They give everybody trophies. You don't get a trophy when you lose. You don't see that anywhere. That is like crazy Western mindset. Look, the guy that did the heavy invested did 10, he got 10 cities. The guy that did 5, he got 5 cities. That's how it rolls. Not everybody's a winner. Someone's going to lose. That's why I don't like soccer. If you can tie after watching 90 minutes of those guys running back and forth and you end in a tie, I go berserk. Am I not right, brother? Pick me up. Who likes soccer and it'd come out clean? That's everyone. I'm sorry. I love soccer. Soccer's a good sport. No, I'm just kidding. Do you guys agree? I mean, you got to win. Someone's got to win, all right? So you got 20. Another came saying, Master, here's your mina. And look at this guy. Check this out because this is the whole point. Which I kept put away in a handkerchief. So he says to him, for I was afraid of you because you're a strong leader. And you take what you do not lay down and you reap what you do not sow. And he said to him, by your own words, I will judge you, you worthless slave. Did you not know that I was an exacting man, taking up what I did not lay down and reaping what I did not sow? Then why did you not put my money in a bank at least put it in a bank? And have come, I would have collected it with some interest. It wouldn't have been great, but it would have been better than nothing. Then he said to the bystanders, take the mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. And they said to him, Master, he has taken the minas away. How have you taken the minas away? I tell you that everyone who has, more will be given. But the one who does not have, even what he does have, shall be taken away. But these enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them, bring them here and slay them in my presence. Okay, so you get the picture. Remind you. Jesus is the nobleman. He goes to a far country. They're trying to sort out their relationship with him. In doing so, he says, I'm going to tell you about a story about this nobleman who has 10 guys come forward. He each gives them one mina and they're to invest it. One guy of the three I bring in for accountability for the sake of story, one guy comes in and kills it, returns tenfold. Awesome. Well done. You're going to get more. Guy has 5. He returns 5. He gets 5 cities. Then this guy comes who has spent his life playing it safe. And he says, well, I'm not going to do anything with the money. I'm going to take it and I'm going to conserve this. Okay, I'm going to hide it in a handkerchief. I'm going to bury it in the backyard. And I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to passively sit back in my leadership and do nothing. Now, remember, this parable is different than the parable of the talents. The parable of the talents over in Matthew 25 is a parable about skill and your gifts and your abilities. The parable of the minas is about responsibility and taking responsibility. So someone entrusts you with responsibility. The responsibility in context is the gospel. So you take the gospel and you hide it. You bury it in the backyard rather than fulfilling your calling as an ambassador, rather than telling people how good Jesus is because you've experienced it yourself, you just bury it. It's all about responsibility and missed opportunity. And so this one guy, he comes forward thinking, you know, here's my handkerchief. At least I didn't lose my one. Well, Jesus says, you weren't even in the game. You could have at least put it in the bank. You could at least run down to the bank and drop it in there. It'd only get a percent interest, maybe a half a percent, maybe zero. But at least it'd been safe. The FDIC would have looked after it, and it would have been protected. You could at least have taken a protective posture with the responsibility you've been entrusted with. He was playing it safe. This is a parable about taking risk. So the one guy takes the one mina, and he takes some risk. He goes out and invests it. He tries some things, and he's marvelously successful. The other guy does it with five. He's modestly successful. And the one guy hides it, and Jesus says, "You wicked servant, I've entrusted you with so much, and you did nothing with it. This is the choice you have when you leave D3. What are you going to do with all of this responsibility? What are you going to do with all of this truth that's been dumped on you? Do you just shuffle it aside and say, that was for a moment, that was for 4 days of my life in the summer? Or are you going to say, hey, that alters my thinking, that alters my life, and doggone it, I'm going to be a different kid and I'm going to be a better leader. You're young leaders, you need to lead. That was why that's a good question you asked. You should be asking, what do I do? What action follows, right? What action follows my behavior? And so you have this perfect parable, and it's all about taking risk. So this one guy plays it safe. He kicks back, and he's the guy who's in the stands yelling at the people on the field to do a better job, and he stays in the stands. I'm telling you, as young men, get on the field. Take leadership. Take dominion. Take opportunity. Point your leadership towards other people. Fear God. Act like men. Take more risk. Some of you are pretty good risk takers. I'm saying take more risk. Right? And I'm not talking about, you know, climb a pine tree to the top where it's wobbly and you're stupid. That's not smart. I'm saying take risk with the gospel and responsibility. So when you go back to school and you sit down in that classroom and you sit in homeroom and you sit down in your consortium or wherever you sit down, then immediately you're looking around saying, which one of these suckers are going to fall? Who's going to become a Christian this year? Because God's placed you in that homeroom. He's placed you in that class for a specific reason. That's the providence of God. That's the sovereignty of God. He wants you to do something about it. And the question will be, will you bury it and be silent? Or will you speak up in boldness and proclaim Christ and say, hey, you might want to go on record, I'm a Christian. You take a good gander, Skippy. You take a good gander because you're going to see me living it out the best I can. I'm not perfect. I am flawed, but I am devoted. I'm all in following Christ. And see your high school or middle school or whatever school it is changed and radically changed. And this is the kind of thing that's going on. This is exactly what Jesus says to these guys who are sitting around putting their mina in a handkerchief. You do that, you have wasted D3. You do that, you'll waste your life. So what I'm challenging you with is to be courageous. Bold in your proclamation, speaking up for Christ, being strong this year. You don't know what tomorrow holds. You don't know what tomorrow holds for all those people in your class. You may be the only gospel they'll ever see or know. It's absolutely critical. And so you need to be bold in your faith. You need to be bold in your proclamation. You need to be totally courageous. Risk-taking is the air you breathe. So if you leave here and it does not register with you and it doesn't affect you to where you want to take more risk and you just want to kind of kick back and be laid back, that's not leadership. Take initiative. Take dominion. Take care of other people. These are the marks of leadership.